Hello everyone. In this section, we will be looking at the role of fertilizers in the agricultural production. In the previous sections, we have been talking about fertilizers and how fertilizers are helping in improvement of yield, how we need to use fertilizers in a judicious manner. In this section, we will be looking at the fertilizers from a very microscopic point of view, and how various fertilizers are providing specific nutrient requirements for specific soils. Fertilizers are nothing but chemicals or compounds that are added to a crop or the soil, which helps in promoting the growth. There are organic or inorganic fertilizers, there are natural or synthetic fertilizers. The basic idea, irrespective of which type of fertilizer is being used, is that it ensures that certain nutrient requirements of the soil is met with and it helps in the plant's growth. Fertilizers are basically responsible for around 40 to 60% of the world's food supply. Major nutrients that are sought after in every fertilizer is basically nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Here they are denoted by their scientific name, scientific symbols of N, P, and K. So if you go out and try to look at any fertilizer, they will always talk about the NPK values. What they basically mean to say is that what is the constituent nitrogen, constituent potassium, and constituent phosphorus available in each of these fertilizer types. Now, NPK can occur in a natural environment also. Every soil can have nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium in it. The problem arises when agricultural land is being used over a long period of time. Every time a crop or a seed is sown and a crop is harvested, the crop takes out nutrients from the soil. Over time, the soil loses out on a lot of nutrients, and hence the crops that are coming out of that same soil do not have the same yield. To tackle the situation, the best solution is to add the nutrients back into the soil. And these nutrients are nothing but the fertilizers. When these nutrients are added to the soil, every year either the growth is maintained or it increases. In the 1960s, Indian government realized its importance of focusing on the agricultural sector and hence came across the Green Revolution. Chemical fertilizers are deemed to be one of the prime reasons why Green Revolution was a success for the Indian government. The increase in fertilizer consumption during the Green Revolution was substantial and it contributed to a lot of successful yield generation methods. From a modest level of 57 million tons in 1951 to 52, the food grain production rose to about 235 million tons in 2008-09. This growth was majorly because of the use and consumption of fertilizers in the agricultural sector. The FAO estimates that the total world demand for agricultural products will be almost 60% higher by the time we touch 2030. This demand is for all agricultural products ranging from seeds, fertilizers, pesticides, and everything. More than 85% of this additional demand will come from developing countries such as ours. The world's options for increasing food productions are also limited, especially because arable land is coming towards a shortage. There is problem with water availability in several countries and even in several states within our country. Hence, it is imperative for the people delving in the agricultural sector to understand how we can develop the yield per hectare in whatever land we have. In the earlier sessions, we've already looked at seed and how seed can help in this particular aim in the agricultural industry. In this section, we will look at how fertilizers can actually help us with this problem. The organic fertilizers are basically carbon-based and are composed of, say, leaves, manure like cow dung, plant residues, and things like that. since age old, before agriculture became a little more technological and a lot of inventions came into picture, majority farmers were using these natural organic fertilizers for increasing production and yield. Today, even in terms of organic fertilizers, we have seen a lot of development. However, inorganic fertilizers, or rather chemical fertilizers, remain one of the most used component by farmers on their fields. Inorganic fertilizers contain simple characteristics, and the nutrients are nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, which are required by the soil. They also contain certain secondary nutrients like calcium, sulfur, and magnesium. There are special fertilizers which carry micro or trace elements that are required for certain plants or certain types of crops, such as boron, chloride, manganese, iron, zinc, copper, molybdenum. All of these are required in very, very microscopic levels, but it is still required in the soil. And there are various fertilizers which fulfill each of these requirements of the soils. It is up to the farmer and up to the area or the soil testing that is done in that area, where we need to determine which type of nutrient is deficient in a particular soil and how can we supplement it with the usage of the right fertilizer. It is vital that the farmers know the exact combination of fertilizers, and that is how soil testing comes into picture. If we do not do testing of the soil, we will not understand what kind of nutrients are already present in the soil, and we will end up with excessive usage of the fertilizer, and that will render the soil non-arable. Hence, it is important that the farmers have the knowledge of the adequate use of fertilizers, the optimum level at which they can use chemical fertilizers in the soil, so that whatever deficient nutrients are found in the soil can be replaced with this. Here we are looking at a few essential elements that are required for plant growth. So let's look at certain primary nutrients that are applied. These are not supplied by fertilizers, chemical fertilizers. These are generally used through organic sources. So we need carbon, we need oxygen and hydrogen. These cannot come in the fertilizer form. This is generally obtained by the plant or the crop from the natural surroundings that are already there in the soil. In fact, organic fertilizers have high concentration of these three elements, that is carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen. Now, there are certain primary nutrients which are supplied through chemical fertilizers. Like we have already discussed, it is nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Secondary nutrients are basically calcium, magnesium, and sulfur. In certain crop varieties, these nutrients are extremely important for maintaining the yield or increasing the yield beyond a particular portion. Some of these nutrients also play an important role at various growth stages of the plant. So it is imperative that at several growth stages, we need to know which type of nutrients need to be given to the plant in a higher number. The last category of nutrients that the plant requires are the micronutrients. Here we need iron, manganese, boron, molybdenum, copper, zinc, chlorine, and many more. Like I said earlier, these are trace elements and they're required in very, very minuscule quantities, but it is still required for the plant's growth. Now, concentration of NPK in any fertilizer is a very important aspect. Now, which type of nitrogen, which type of phosphate, or which type of potassium is required in the fertilizer is also predetermined. Phosphate P205 is ideal for plant growth, and potassium K20 is ideal. So whenever we look at a fertilizer and its chemical composition, we are trying to determine how much nitrogen, how much P205, and how much K20 is available or present in that particular fertilizer. Let us look at the grades of fertilizer depending on the quantity or the quantum of nitrogen, P205 and K20. So if we look at the grades here, these are the quantities that are given, and this is the grade, which is nothing but the combination of whatever is present. Now, if we look at ammonium sulfate, it is predominantly, or rather it is only nitrogen. Its major component is nitrogen when we look at it from an NPK category. It does not have any trace of phosphate or potassium, and hence its grade is 20.6 by 0 by 0. If we look at another type of chemical fertilizer, which is single superphosphate, it has only phosphorus. And diammonium phosphate, which is also known as DAP, has large number of phosphate and a little bit of nitrogen in it. The one fertilizer which has equal amount of all the three elements that are required for plant growth is the Sufala fertilizer, which is nothing but a nitrophosphate fertilizer manufactured by the Rashtriya Chemical Fertilizers Company. It has equal amounts of nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium, and it is supposed to be a very high grade fertilizer. Now, does that actually mean the other fertilizers are of no use? It does not mean like that. In several areas, there are soil types which have high nitrogen content, or they have high potassium content or high phosphate content. In such areas, using a Sufala will unnecessarily cause one of the element compositions of the soil to go off balance. In such cases, the other types of fertilizers which have nitrogen or phosphate or potassium as a major constituent can be used for this. And hence, it depends on what type of soil we are working on, what are the nutrient requirements of that particular soil. Depending on all of this, we can decide on which grade of fertilizer do we need to go about. So, what role does the fertilizer play when it comes to production of food or fodder or fiber? Fertilizer is one of the key ingredients that takes care of the food security problem. Obviously, because it impacts the yield, and higher the yield, better it is for the food security issue. The feed of the whole country is depending on this particular product. And it is observed through history, and even now in the current times, hunger is one of the biggest reasons for political instability in several countries. Hunger has always been one of the biggest reasons for countries or governments to fall, or certain new governments to rise. Several nations across the African continent are called banana republics because the public there do not actually have basic requirements being met with. The government has absolutely no control over them because they cannot meet with the hunger requirements of the public, and that is why nobody is ready to listen. So to avoid all this form of anarchy in the political system or the social system, availability of food is of prime importance, and fertilizer helps in this. It also controls food crises. During this pandemic, when we were battling with COVID, we have realized how important it is to ensure that food reaches us on time. The entire distribution network suffered. There were several vegetables or cereals or pulses that could never come to us. Governments focused completely on these distribution networks and tried to get maximum possible food to all of us. Even when we were locked down inside our houses, the farmers went out into their fields and started working because they had to take care of the food security problem. And any farmer who had used the right amount of fertilizer in the optimum manner succeeded in this. To feed an increasing population in spite of limited resources is a great challenge for any country. And until and unless we have supplementary support from products like seeds, fertilizers, and pesticides, there is no way of achieving this Herculean feat for anyone. What are the role of water-soluble fertilizers? Now, efficiently, if you look at it from an NPK perspective, the water-soluble fertilizers actually increase the efficiency of NPK in any soil. There has to be an availability of complex or straight common fertilizers. Complex fertilizers have a very, very convoluted or a very, very complex molecular structure, and its impact is also in that manner. It is also important for us to understand whether we have water-soluble fertilizers, because if these fertilizers are not soluble in water, they will remain as residue in the soil and it will impact the soil quality over the long run. It is because of such similar instances in the past when we have been rampantly using fertilizers in our agriculture industry that there are a few farmers in several pockets of the country who have moved to an organic way of propagating yield. Though that is definitely a shift in the paradigm for the industry, but the chemical fertilizers are not going to go out of the game ever soon. It will remain as one of the most consumed agricultural input in our country. So there are certain advantages of indigenous or imported water-soluble fertilizers. Obviously, the two major advantage is efficiency is rated at the maximum. If we apply irrigation systems coupled with good water-soluble fertilizers, irrigation again is a major infrastructure requirement for our agricultural industry. There are several farms in several pockets of our country where reaching water to those farms is very, very difficult. For example, if you look at farming in a hilly zone, in a hilly region where they create bunds and then plant crops in those bunds or those small plots, reaching out water to those lands becomes a major infrastructure challenge. And this is where irrigation becomes an important aspect for agriculture. If this irrigation is coupled with a good quality water-soluble imported or indigenous fertilizer, there is definitely a successful yield. We should also look at the economic returns by saving water and fertilizers. If we are excessively using fertilizers, it's a problem. If we are excessively using water, it is again a problem. Our resources are limited. And within these limited resources, our requirements are very great. To take care of this, we need to ensure that we safeguard whatever resources we have, whether it is in terms of land, whether it is in terms of water, whether it is in terms of air, or if it is in terms of fertilizers. The integrated plant nutrient supply system was set up with an objective to ensure adequate availability of all nutrients to all plants. Here, this aim is achieved by managing the quality of manures or fertilizers that are given to the farmers through periodical demand assessments. Exceeding demand or very less demand is considered to be outliers. In this case, it is important that we not only ensure timely supply, but we also understand the consumption patterns. And if we find any outliers, we tackle them individually on a case-to-case basis. And the IPNS helps with this. Promoting the IPNS, which is basically a soil-based fertilizer, chemical fertilizer usage system, which needs to be looked at from a very judicious or a balanced point of view, it is very important to promote the system. If we promote it, it helps in creating the optimum demand for fertilizers, but at the same time, it ensures that there is no short supply of fertilizers to the farmers who are in need of it. Now, let us understand fertilizer consumption and availability of fertilizer in our country. It is great to know that India is actually 100% self-sufficient in terms of its requirement of urea. We are able to produce urea to meet 100% demand requirement, which in itself is a great achievement for the agricultural industry. As far as diammonium phosphate or DAP is concerned, we are almost 80% self-sufficient and only 20% is availed from other countries. The government of India has also been promoting balanced and integrated nutrient use. They have been educating the farmers through various methods, whether they are television ads or documentaries or infomercials, whether they are training programs at rural grassroots levels through semi-government or government bodies. They have been trying to tell the farmers to understand how much fertilizers are supposed to be used. They're trying to tell the farmers that overuse or underuse will create problems for them. The result of all of this is that our NPK consumption ratio has improved, and it has improved to a great extent. This has also positively impacted certain farmers or certain farming areas in the country. Again, the impact is not exactly uniform. Though it is a good thing that we are self-sufficient about the demand and supply for certain chemical fertilizers in India, the impact of this achievement is not uniformly distributed across the country. There are several places in this country where, though the demand is being met with, the farmers do not have the requisite infrastructure to take care of their crops, or they do not have the requisite knowledge or financial backing to take care of their agricultural requirements. The fertilizer consumption in our country, if we look at the average fertilizer consumption per hectare in our country, we have registered the NPK fertilizer consumption to almost 128.6 kgs per hectare. The state which consumes, the top three states which consume the most number of fertilizers kilograms per hectare would be Andhra Pradesh, Punjab and Tamil Nadu. We also have other states like Haryana, Rajasthan, Jharkhand, Himachal and the Orissa, who also fall into the higher fertilizer consumption rate. Now, barring these states, there are also other states which have an agrarian economy. For example, we have Madhya Pradesh, which is one of the key wheat providers in the country. But again, the chemical fertilizer usage in that state is not up to the mark. It does not fall in the top 6, 8 or 10 rankings as far as the Indian states are concerned. Now, we need to look that after independence, we have consumed almost 170 times of fertilizers than we used to consume before. So whether they are organic or inorganic, our requirement and consumption of fertilizers has increased by 170 times. It's almost 200 times. This basically means that the demand for fertilizers has increased. The demand for food has increased in our country. The 1960s Green Revolution and the subsequent increase or intensification of the agricultural practices has also been one of the major contributors to the growth of fertilizers industry. Fertilizers and pesticides today compose to the major cost of production in India along with seeds and labor. So when we look at agricultural inputs or the agricultural input industry, seeds and labor definitely become a key portion, but the major cost of production comes from fertilizers and pesticides. It is that impactful for our industry. The growth, obviously, we have been telling that it is the Industrial Revolution that has led to the growth. But where have we reached with all this growth? India today ranks third in terms of consumption of fertilizers right after China and US. And both these countries are ranked higher because of the geographical area that is available for farming in them. The Indian fertilizer industry has succeeded in meeting almost the entire demand of all chemical fertilizers except MOP. Like we said in the previous slide, we are almost at 100, we are at 100% capacity for fulfilling the demand of urea and 80% self-sufficient for diammonium phosphate. Apart from that, there are several other fertilizers where we are self-sufficient. We are able to meet demand locally. We do not need any form of external support. This is also one of the greatest achievements for the agricultural sector in India. The single superphosphate unit in Ranipet was set up in 1906, that was before the independence. Its annual capacity was almost 6,000 metric ton. It is still operational in Ranipet. The FACT in Kerala and FCI in Bihar were set up in 1940s and 1950s. We also have the Rashtriya Chemical Fertilizers in Maharashtra. All of these have been producing fertilizers, whether NPK or micro elements or secondary nutrient fertilizers, they have been producing it relentlessly pre-independence and post-independence. The installed capacity in the year 2003 reached 121 lakh metric ton of nitrogen, which also included 208 lakh metric ton of urea. This capacity also gave us almost 54 lakh metric ton of phosphatic nutrients. And we have been consuming this in our country. We have been at times even helping other countries with such nutrients. The rapid buildup of the fertilizer industry or the fertilizer production capacity has been achieved as a result of certain favorable economic or environmental policy conditions. We have been facilitating large investments in public, cooperative and private sectors for fertilizers. This has helped boost the industry. Presently, there are almost 57 large-sized fertilizer plants manufacturing a wide range of nitrogenous, phosphatic and other complex fertilizers. Now, from these 57 units, there are 29 units which produce urea. So more than 50% are producing urea. 20 of these units are producing diammonium phosphate and other complex fertilizers. 13 units produce ammonium sulfate, calcium ammonium nitrate, and other low analysis nitrogenous fertilizers. And India also produces the largest number of NP or NPK grade complex fertilizers. So the growth in itself tells you a story about how fertilizer industry in India has come up to be one of the most key agri-input sectors, and it has actually promoted agriculture to a great extent. Now, what are the nutrient contents of a fertilizer? We have spoken about the primary nutrient contents, the secondary and the trace elements. Let us look at some of the primary nutrients, which is nothing but nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium. Now, the concentration of nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium in any fertilizer is expressed in form of percentages. What percentage of nitrogen, what percentage of P2O5 and what percentage of K2O. In case of nitrogenous fertilizers, nitrogen may be in a ammoniacal form, a nitrate form or an amide form. Now, either of these forms basically impact the way in which it reacts in the soil. If we have to give an example outside agriculture, if you know that we have been consuming vitamin C tablets since the COVID times have begun. Now, there are two types of vitamin C tablets that we get in the market. One is an ascorbic acid and one is called an ascorbate. If you look at the package, you will get to know. It is said by doctors that the ascorbate is better for us because it helps in implementing or rather ingesting vitamin C into our system in a much faster and efficient manner. Whereas ascorbic acid may not necessarily get absorbed. Similarly for fertilizers, there are several chemical components that can be put into the fertilizers, but the nitrogen in an ammoniacal form, in a nitrate form or an amide form are the best suited for increasing nitrogen content of the soil. Nitrogen introduced into the soil in any other form may either harm the soil or it may result in no reaction at all. Now, ammoniacal form of nitrogen can be either in the form of ammonium sulfate or ammonium chloride. So these can be the major components of a fertilizer. Nitrate nitrogen can be found in the form of ammonium nitrate or calcium ammonium nitrate. And amide can be in the form of urea. So in India, we can very safely assume that most farmers are using nitrogen in the amide form since we have such high consumption of urea. The phosphate component of the fertilizers basically are in the water soluble form or a citrate soluble form. Now, we have to understand the phosphate component from a very different perspective. There is a water soluble phosphate component in the fertilizer water insoluble form. Now, the portion of phosphate in the fertilizer which is soluble in water, or rather it is soluble in 2% neutral ammonium citrate, is termed as insoluble, or rather which is soluble in water and which is not soluble are segregated when it comes to understanding the phosphate component. When we look at both these components together, so when we look at the phosphate component of a particular fertilizer, what we look at is how much percentage is soluble and how much percentage is not. In certain fertilizers, almost 90 to 98% of the phosphate component is soluble in water, and roughly 2 to 8% is not soluble, and they are insoluble or they remain as residue in the soil. It is very important to understand how much percentage of insoluble component is there in your fertilizer, because if these chemicals remain as residue, they will impact the soil quality. So the lower the amount of insoluble phosphate, the better it is for your soil. Now, the sum of both the soluble and insoluble phosphate components is termed as the total phosphate component of a particular fertilizer. So when you look at a fertilizer and its components, what we need to look at is what is the component of the soluble phosphatic element in your fertilizer. Now, let us look at the nutrient content of a few solid fertilizers, which are either formed in the form of pellets or powder, the way it is used. Ammonium sulfate has a total nitrogen count of 20.6, which is completely ammoniacal nitrogen. That is in the ammoniacal form. Ammonium chloride similarly has an ammoniacal form, and it has a total count of nitrogen only. Calcium ammonium nitrate, on the other hand, has ammoniacal nitrogen as well as nitrate nitrogen, because it has both nitrogen in the form of ammonium and nitrogen in the form of a nitrate. Urea, on the other hand, is completely total nitrogen in the amide form. So there is no ammoniacal nitrogen or no nitrate nitrogen in urea. It is a pure amide. Now, let us go further into it and figure out how much of water soluble phosphate do we have in each of these fertilizers. So the ammonium phosphate will roughly have the neutral ammonium citrate soluble phosphate of around 20, out of which 19.5 is water soluble, which means 0.5 is not soluble. Ammonium phosphate sulfate nitrate will have around 17%, which is water soluble. Similarly, urea has 25.2 water soluble. But if you look at the residual remains of the phosphatic component of a fertilizer, the highest is in urea. And hence, in recent times, farmers have been facing a lot of challenges with excessive usage of urea, which is undoctored or undocumented. Now, let us look at it from a liquid fertilizer point of view, where we spray or we sprinkle on the soil with fertilizers. So urea will have a total nitrogen count of 32, where ammoniacal nitrogen is 77.7, nitrogen nitrate is 7.7, and we have 16.6 as amide. Now let's look at superphosphoric acid. It has a total phosphate count of 70. Now out of this, how much is soluble, how much is insoluble will be given on the packaging. Similarly, for ammonium polyphosphate, we have a total phosphate count of 34. And we have roughly ammoniacal nitrogen almost 10%. This is very important for us to understand, because depending on these chemical compositions, we will be able to understand which type of soil will be using which type of fertilizer. The basis, the soil testing and the nutrient testing of the soil, we will need to decide which of these fertilizers would be ideally suited. Also, we need to understand, is it the solid state fertilizers or the liquid state fertilizers which are better for your particular type of soil and crop? Now, let us look at fertilizer products and some of their nutrient concern. So, urea is generally considered to be the best product when it comes to nitrogen. It has 46% nitrogen. It is one of the best products that we use for nitrogen. Then comes ammonium sulfate, which is 21%. Let us look at diammonium phosphate, which is the second most used fertilizer in the country. It has almost 46% of phosphate and 18% of ammonia. So depending on our requirements, we can either go towards urea or diammonium phosphate, or we can look at any other form of fertilizer. But all of these are used in India by the Indian farmers to provide supplementary nutrition to the soil. Now let us look at some of the secondary nutrients. Those secondary nutrients are calcium, magnesium, sulfur, and a few other trace elements like that. Now they are required basically for the plant growth in very, very smaller quantities. In comparison to the primary nutrients, secondary nutrients may not be required in that great numbers. Now any deficiency in this, though it is not required in good numbers, but any deficiency in the secondary nutrients may directly result in lower yield or crop failures. So though we do not require them in very large quantities, absence of these can also result in a lot of problems. Hence, it is important for farmers to realize that when they are using fertilizers, they need to also focus on secondary nutrients as much as they focus on the primary nutrients. Then we come to the micronutrients. Now, micronutrients are nothing but elements, proper elements like iron, zinc, manganese, copper, etc. Now, the FCO has identified roughly 10 chemical components or minerals that can be used as micronutrient providing fertilizers. They are zinc sulfate, manganese sulfate, borax, ammonium molybdate, and several others. These are used in very, very minute quantities, and they are not used as frequently as the primary nutrient provider or the secondary nutrient provider chemical fertilizers. Now, let us look at the micronutrient fertilizers and their components. Let's look at the element that is there and what is the content, how much percentage of that element is available in each of these. Some of the best, if we have to look at molybdenum as a requirement for your soil, ammonium molybdate has 52% molybdenum in it. If we look at, say, zinc requirement, zinc sulfate has around 21% of zinc in the compound. Similarly, copper requirement can be fulfilled by using copper sulfate solution. Some of these will also have additional sulfur content. For example, zinc sulfate has 15% sulfur content. Manganese sulfate has 17% sulfur content because the molecule itself needs sulfur to be created. Thank you so much.